With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+ terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Welcome back to part two for the Gentleman Stories with Ray Askew.
So we've you've started obviously with Joe and Adam. Did you on that time? Because obviously I know we've got more people in. We know a lot more people that have obviously been with you. Did you have anyone else that started to go around that time with Joe and Adam?
Well, the funniest one about it all was Adam's turned pro, and then of course I'm also helping Ian train Gavin Tate. You know, I mean, this is the lovely thing about it's same as with Ian Fletcher here. He had an holiday booked, and they gave Gav a chance for the Southern Area title fight right when he was on holiday, and he paid thousands out for this holiday. And he went to me, "You take him." He goes, "You know, what's name?" But I mean, you know, Ian had done the body of work there with.
Yeah.
And I thought, wow, that is really something that he's trusting me.
Trust
in. And I get on with Gav. I actually work for Gav now, funny enough. And so he's the governor in a different one, because his nickname was the governor. Yeah. Well, he's my governor now. but anyway, you know, I was doing bits with Gav, and we get on like an house on fire. We get on really, really well. And it was at the Coronet in, where's that? The Coronet is, the Coronet Theatre is Elephant and Castle.
Okay.
And they put us up in the tower like a couple of princesses, because if you ever see the Coronet, it's got these princess towers on it. Honestly, it's an unbelievable building to be stuck in the Elephant and Castle. Anyway, they stuck us up in this room, and you know, one thing, we had a great time up there. Got a fantastic story to tell you about it. Gav won the Southern Area title, and my mark of respect back to Ian, because he'd done it, I refused to have my photograph taken with Gav in the ring, because I thought that would have been so shit for all the work Ian had put in at that particular time, for me to be standing there with my arm ready and smiling and look at me and this bloke with a belt on. For me, that is. But that wasn't the case, so we didn't do it. And later on, Gav did come over to me, but once again, it was a similar situation to Adam Dingsdale going to Ibox.
Yeah.
Gav was from Sheppey. And he was struggling. I don't know if you've ever tried to drive down the A2 there to go to Faversham. In the summer, you get stuck behind tractors. It's literally a 20-minute journey. It can take you an hour and a half. And so Gav's coming back from work, getting back late from work, getting in the thing, trying to get up to Faversham, and he's not getting there till late, and then he's doing his stuff and going back and training. And it was a mess. And anyway, so he agreed to, he came up to me, and once again, Ian gave his blessing. And that was that. So that was how that happened. But in the Coronet thing, I love this story. It was one of the funny stories that come out of boxing. He's won the title against, I can't remember the bloke's name. He'd get the umber back because he's like a YouTuber or something. But he was a good fighter, great fighter. And it was a great fight, really good fight. I think he won something like, you know, it was there for one of the small fights of the year. Yeah. It was a proper fight. Have a look at it on YouTube. Chess Simmons. Have a look at it on YouTube. It's a fantastic
fight.
Anyway, after the fight, it's come back. Gax sat down and we sit down and went, oh, it's brilliant. I go, Ian's going to be so pleased. I go, I know he's watching from Mexico or wherever he'd gone. And we're sitting there, there's a knock at the door. And this woman comes down and she goes, Gavin, would you mind, we've got so-and-so downstairs. This, she said these two people's names. She goes, and they would love to meet you. And Gab looked at me and I looked at him and he went, yeah, yeah, sure, yeah, you know, come up, yeah. And so anyway, a couple of bandages off of Gab's hands and he's sort of just sitting there with his belt on the thing and he's waiting for that fella from iLondon or whatever they're called to interview him. Anyway.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
yeah. And I can't remember anyone's name because I'm terrible for it. It's a wonder I remember the people I trained names. Anyway, these two fellas come in and these dark trench coats and that's what's up there. Trench coats, they were like Crombies. And they came in and went, oh, Gav, nice to meet you. And me, didn't know my name. Nice to meet you, bloke. I shook my hand and I went, oh, nice to meet you. Thanks for coming up and speaking again. He was going, yeah, Gav, good fight that. You know, it was close in points and all this. And he was chatting away to us. He was going, yeah, 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 blah, blah. And he's going, oh, you know, nice to meet you. And they went like that and I shut the door. Well, who were they, Gav? Well, I don't know. I ain't got the faintest. Anyway, this woman pops back in to say, oh, the fella from to interview Gav's coming up now. Went, oh, yeah. Before you go, who was those two fellas? And she went, what? That is whatever the names were again, because I still can't remember them. And I went, yeah, who are they then? And she went, oh, you're joking. They're famous actors. They're in, I think they're in things like Football Factory or something. I don't
are
know,
you
I
on about like Danny Dyer and Hassan Hussein? That would be
well,
the
no. Anyway,
I'll try and find out.
So we went, oh, thanks for that.
Don't mind, I didn't know
we're
your name.
Lions, you know. shut the door. I looked around the camera. I go, I don't know, I'm to you. And he went, no, not that. I said, clues. I said, I've never watched any films. So I said, I wouldn't know them anyway. He goes, no, I ain't never watched them. I goes, I said, if it had been Shrek or someone, I said, oh, an instant, but yeah, we didn't have a clue who they were. And then when we told people, they went, oh, you're joking, did you get their autographs? And, well, I'm not autographing anyway, but yeah.
So with the like the rotation then, so you've you're beginning to build your stable.
Yeah, absolutely unintentionally.
Yeah. So did you build did you build like more fighters on? Because obviously when we turn up, obviously we know you through Joe. We know obviously the crop that you had when we've obviously turned up with your like Charlie Shane, Ollie Edwards, yeah. All of that.
Oh,
so
no, yeah, you're right. Yeah.
Huh? The yeah, the and then so
we were prior though. We went to Sheerness.
That's
prior to
that. Yeah. So Ollie Edwards. I mean, I trained him from a little boy through the kickboxing. He'd done the kickboxing.
Okay.
So and then same sort of thing again. I had friends at St Mary's. Bert and Andy Kidd. You know, Andy Kidd's a really good friend of mine. We love the same music, you know, noisy stuff. And you know, he's a really good friend of mine. And Andy Kidd was coming down when we was doing kickboxing, bringing fighters down to come and train with my blokes and all that sort of stuff. So we've always had a kind of little connection there within the amateurs and stuff like that. And Andy Kidd was training Bert, who was, you know, probably swell, you know, sitting on Sheerness Fabstrom's only pro at the time, you know what I mean? And Bert was training people at St Mary's as well, you know. So I thought, it's obvious really, I'll send Ollie to St Mary's for a bit because, you know, you got to bear in mind by this time, it went through this funny phase that if you had a pro licence, you couldn't have an amateur licence. Then rescinding it, then doing it, rescinding it, you know. But there was this thing and so I'd already got my pro license, so I said, go to St Mary's. I like them lads there. And, of course, they're a quality gym. And he done a season of boxing with them, then he turned pro. And then by that time, this is what I have to look to my list for those that can't see me. So there was Joe, Gav, Adam Dingsdale, Ollie Edwards, Dave Jones at that particular time. And that was
your
original people.
Yeah.
And it was Dave come along, and this was the funny thing about Big Dave, famous Dave.
famous Dave.
He turned up and I said, Dave, you know, probably, and I started training for it again, same thing. I started training for his last amateur fights, and he fought who Dave Allen knocked out. the black guy.
Oh, no.
I've got a photo on my Facebook with Dave, Tom, that fella, and his trainer. Oh, who
it's going to annoy me. Yeah. It's going to annoy me.
Yeah, his trainer's name, and he's really well known as well.
Go on, carry on.
That was that. So Dave turned up, and I said, "Right, well, he goes, we've got you to turn pro. I trained for him last year. He's at amateurs, and when he turned pro, I said, right, I goes, I want to introduce you to someone I've been training. I goes, Joel Feed. I goes, he's now promoting.
Is this who this Joe's is now when? When Joe's got his license now, when he's left us and then he's beginning to get his license and stuff like that.
So I said, Joe Elfeed, and Dave just nodding at me, and Dave's the friendliest, loveliest bloke you ever meet, but he was just sort of going and smiling at me, almost like he's taking the piss out of me. And I thought, I couldn't pick it up, but I thought, it's safe. What's that about this? So anyway, and I go, I'm going to take you to meet him. So I'm really important now. I'm a pro trainer and all this sort of stuff. And so Joe comes in the gym. Joe don't blink, don't do anything, walks up to him. Doug goes, hello, Joe, like that, shook hands and went, blah, blah, blah. And I went, do you know him? He went, I was in the bed opposite him in the army. Yeah. what a small world, though, isn't it?
Is it Nick Webb?
Nick Webb.
Yeah. Right. I knew.
What's his trainer's name? Because he was in Snatch, weren't he? He was the fighter that fought Brad Pitt and
Scott Welch. Yeah. Because Scott Welch's son has been.
It's the lever on the side.
And if you hear that noise, it's the lever on the side.
His son was pictured with Conor McGregor.
On his side. I mean, he's a great fighter as well. Nice bloke as well. I've done my pro license with him. He was my partner in it. Yeah, which was, it's quite funny because then later on at St Mary's, he brought Nick Webb down and there was Tom. Dave,
Tom Dallas.
I was in training Tom at that time. But it was Tom, Dave. Tom, Dave was going to train with Tom quite a bit anyway, and Tom was training with Dave, coming down to us. And then Scott Welsh, there's a photo on my Facebook, if you ever look there, they're all on there together, all smothered in blood. And then later on, obviously, of course, Tom come over because Andy Kidd, once again, he went, he's had operations on his elbows and stuff, probably what I need as well. But he couldn't train Tom anymore, so he sent him over to me. It's nice, again, nice. These are people that I surround myself with, these are people,
Tom's a sound character, isn't he?
lovely, decent bloke. He couldn't put up with my wife's questioning him all the time. Are the doors taller in your house? Have you got a big bed so your feet don't hang off? Yeah. And he used to go, yes, Kelly. It's a big bed.
I'll tell you a funny story. When I first met Tom, he was, I think he was either 9 or 10 and I was an amateur. And I'd been at St Mary's for, a year, just over a year. And I don't know who his sparring partner was, but this bloke was a man mountain. He was huge. But obviously our class was used to have the normal training. And then it used to be the class for the fighters. And then Tom's class would be after, or he'd just turn up on his own and he'd do training. But his sparring partner would always turn up halfway through our class and walk around.
Bring him on. Superman.
We used to call him Superman because he looked like Clark Kent. Massive, and he used to walk around and he'd be like, no, you ain't doing this right, you gotta be like, bang, bang, hit this bag, and the bag would fall off. And I remember one day I was off, like, no, I'm gonna say so. I was like, Tommy's bullying us, and Tom stuck it on him, like, I'll stay behind just to watch it. I was like, yeah, Tom, I think he's bullying us, mate.
Tom,
back in, I'm going back 20 years,
I remember Tom in the amateurs. Because I took my daughter to Aaron Gay's show. No, it wasn't the box club. Oh. It was just their club show. And I took a couple of fighters there. We had a really good day there. We won every fight there. And just as we was going in for our bit, Tom had obviously boxed as an amateur earlier on in the day, and Andy come out, and I didn't know Tom at the time. Well, oh, Andy, like that, and I saw the man.
Stuck under the door frame.
yeah, he was there, and I went, Andy, where are you staying? If I was close about the fight. He went, oh, no, I'd love to, we've got to get back. Tom's just money, his fight's going back. So it would have been around about the same time we were talking about him, just beaten someone in Aringo as well. Yeah, that was the first time I ever met Tom.
But yeah, he's lovely, man. He's such a
diamond. Absolutely diamond.
Yeah.
So your gym now is prospering, let's say, with more fighters coming in. Who else did you attract in at this point then?
Well, at that point, I'll tell you what we did was, like on the Sundays, as you know, we was having those things. So we had everyone. Who was anyone in Medway coming down and then Grant and Jordan? Just check down my list. Dan Woodgate, Dan Anslick, who was training Charlie at the time, you know, and Charlie was coming down there. We had loads of people, you know,
Charlie Shane as well.
Colin Payne from
TKO.
Really good friend. We used to go to shows together when we was both fighting and stuff. And, you know, he used to bring his people down and he had some great kids, Ashley Collins and people like that who were, you know, would have made fantastic pros. They would have made fantastic pros. And they used to bring them down. And, so we had a lot of people during that time with Chev and everyone else. And we had some what's the fellow's name now? I really should have wrote his name down because I really liked the bloke as well. He ended up turning pro with Joe's organisation. It came from the coast sort of way.
What's the brothers called?
No, they weren't brothers. But they used to come down as well. Lovely guys. They're tough as old boots. Journeyman. So much respect for them. So that was at that particular time. But then later on, we got Danny and Charlie.
Charlie Shane, Danny Shannon. Danny Shannon's a nutcase. And I will say it to him as well.
He's an enigma. I absolutely love him. But you know, this is the thing is I could not train people I did not like. I really couldn't. Mm. And that's super unprofessional of me and not probably not fair. But if you haven't got something with them, it ain't going to happen. Ain't going to happen. You've got to understand they're doing something. And one of the things I think, this is another thing that people don't appreciate about boxers, they're really sensitive creatures. You know, I've seen people, if I told them they couldn't lace their left boot on first before they fought, they wouldn't fight. They go, I'm lacing my left boot on first or I'm not fighting. You know, all these kind of funny little things and that. And they're nervous, and you see them watching. They're great. I mean, fighters in the gym when they're getting ready for a fight, a pain in the bum. You know, I mean, they're grumpy. They stink full of protein. You know, they just fill the gym up with protein farts. their temper. You know, they never lose their temper. They've always been lovely to me and to each other. But you know, you can feel the edge about them and all this sort of stuff. And it's a pain in the ass being around fighters when they're getting ready. I don't know how their wives and their manager would be. But, you know, Danny Shannon, I mean, he cracks me up. He's a class boxer, and he's always been a class boxer. I don't believe he ever reached his potential. And I would say it's his own fault, if I'm going to be honest. Yeah. And I'll tell you why it's his own fault. He's so busy chucking out challenges to everyone. I said to him once, I goes, if you was in a phone box, I said you'd pick a fight with yourself. Because the reason it was being, it wasn't from anything negative. It was he had plenty of self-belief. Yeah. But he used to keep picking these people that were miles heavier than him. and I used to say, get your weight down because that you look amazing because he's always in fantastic.
He's always in condition. Oh, I love that show.
You know what I mean? He can fight, he can punch, he can box. He's got a good fighting brain. And he's as tough as old, he can take a punch. He's as tough as old boots. But it kind of just didn't give himself enough chances. And of course, he fought on the road for most of the time. Obviously, didn't. It was never going to be.
I think that's how he started off his career.
Yeah.
And I'll get that. I mean, you know, we all get it with a journeyman, don't we?
He was a hard journeyman, though, when he went.
I remember, it's not funny, sorry for me, exactly funny enough. But, you know, Johnny Greaves, the journeyman.
Yeah.
You know, I think he had 300 fights or something before he retired. And his brother started doing a bit of it, but I don't think he'd done as much as Johnny did. But Johnny Greaves, he was asked on, because Johnny Greaves came out of West Ham originally, and that bloke can fight and he can box. And then you look at his record and all these people out there, the boxing experts that have never been in a boxing gym. Yeah, he's had 300 fights. He's only won, let's say 20 of them. I don't know what you're
reckoning. Yeah.
But, you know, 20 of them. He can't be that good. And I thought,
you don't really expose yourself
to not knowing anything when you come out of shit like that. Because he was once asked, they said to him, John, you're really good, and we all know you're really good, and everyone you've ever fought knows you're really good, because they've been on the end of it sometimes when they've tried to take a few liberties with him. We know how the journeyman thing works. You know, we're not going to say that they come to lose, but they don't. What am I going to say? How am I going to say this? They are there as a tool
To progress
people and move them along, aren't they?
Yeah, well, it's something that we've spoke about, and many have got and try to get different, obviously, journeyman perspectives and stuff like that. But they, the one thing I think is unanimous with people that box and stuff like that is they are very important to young pros.
Professional boxing wouldn't be where it is today.
Right? Oh, no, but people don't understand it. People go,
they're more important than
shit.
They
go, shit, because he's lost. Like you just said.
This was the story that told you, you know, if you want to explain a journeyman, this is it. So I think Johnny was one of these fighters, you know, I could be wrong with the figures here, but I'm pretty sure he was on at least, say, 1,500 quid a fight, at least, you know, because he boxed world champions and everything. You know, he's been there with everyone. He done a thing years ago. Frank Warren rang him up. He was just like, he's got prime mesh shops in Greentree, I think he is, whatever. Cool. And he was opening the shop up one morning, and he got a phone call off of Frank Warren. He went, we really need you up in Scotland. So so-and-so's fell out. It's going to kick off. Something along these lines. This could be an inaccurate story, but it still makes the same point. He jumped in, gave the keys to his brother or his partner or whoever it was, jumped in his car and drove up to Scotland. You imagine what that was like. Yeah. And he got there just in time for this main event fight. Done something like 10 rounds with the bloke in an untitled fight. Got a lovely purse, which I do know the price of, but it's not for me to say. But it was a lot of money. It was a lot of money. And that's what Johnny Bruce is all about. So someone said to him, John, we know from your amateur career and from everyone we've ever spoken to, you're a brilliant boxer. Why don't you fight for an area title? And he went, are you joking? And he went, no, why don't you fight for it? He goes, couldn't you win a job? He goes, yeah, I could win a Southern Area title. He said, I box every week. He said, every week, he said, I get 1,500 quid, let's say.
Yeah.
I mean, possibly more than that, possibly less, whatever. I get there. He said, so if I want to box for a Southern Area title fight, I would have to do a training camp of at least 10 weeks.
Yeah.
He goes, in which I wouldn't be able to have a fight in between on the risk of getting cut and going against any contract that I've signed in the process of it. He said, and should I go on to win that Southern Area title fight, he said, I would probably get $3,000. He said, and he goes, I might get a nice belt. He goes, and it might give me a couple of other fights. But he goes, pretty sure that most people won't be wanting someone that's won a title belt to be their journeyman and things like that, because they would want to have an element of more control over it like this. He said, so he said, just do the maths. He goes, I'm not in this. He goes, for any other reason than the money. He said, you know, he does love boxing. I mean, I've seen plenty of examples of he absolutely lives and breathes it and loves it. He still loves it now. But nevertheless, you know, that's a story worth telling. You know, concerning what a journeyman is and why they're a journeyman and why. Because you sell tickets. Oh, Jesus.
The hardest thing in boxing.
You got, when you initially start, this is what I found, this was the pattern. You'd get them initially, they would they could probably sell 100 tickets. You know what I mean? Oh, everyone wanted another professional boxer. You know, we all here, we all know it's not very glamorous at all, but that they're looking at is, you know, Sky TV and, you know, the title fights and all this sort of stuff. There's absolutely no glamour in boxing. The reason why lots of good professional boxers have got a bit of humility is because they've all started from the same position. Some smelly old gym somewhere or other, gone through all the things of it, and they understand what it's like. But unless you're an ex-Olympian or someone that's got real, real super ability, you know,
with sponsors behind them,
can chuck in their day job so they don't have to risk, you know, sort of doing a 10-hour shift and then trying to get in the gym to train in between and all that sort of stuff, you know.
Or strike lucky like Dillian White with AJ, because he started small hall. Dillian White started small hall and then AJ.
I'll tell you, first time I met Dillian White was Blue Watch, you know, the thing that Adam Dingsdale was fighting there. I can't remember what it's called, but that it was a venue for a little bit of, you know, other things other than boxing, but Glow, that was it. I was going in there and I had me laminate on, and I walked in and Dom let me in, and Dillian White went to come in. I went, no, you're not coming in, mate. And I came back out again. I went, he's fighting. And I went, he ain't got a laminate. And I went, you got a laminate, mate. I didn't know it was Dillian White, because I mean, it was early on in his career.
Yeah.
You know? And he goes, no, I ain't got one. And I went, didn't you get one off of, I can't remember his promoter. Fury's old promoter.
Hennessy,
really nice guy. He's really is, actually. I like Hennessy. And so I said, I'll go and see him and get it for you. So they wouldn't let him in. They didn't know he was. And they go, no, you're not coming in. He's going, mate. He goes, I went and just popped out the whatever it was, you know. So I went in and got his laminate and brought it out for him. And just, there it is, mate. Not even, oh, thanks so much, mate. Good luck with your fight. And that was the first time I met him later on. I took Babe up to spar with him up in Loughborough.
Okay.
In the strangest places ever. So I thought he was going to Loughborough University, you know, because Loughborough University is a big thing for sport and fitness.
They've got a great football team up there, strangely enough, as well.
They've got great everything up there because they've got all the facilities up there. But it wasn't. And I went, what is this untenable university? It's this training estate, and it was basically in a mechanics workshop where he'd had a ring set up, a gas heater to warm the place up, and that was it. But you know,
we know about garages.
You know, once again, it just shows you it's not all glamour, and you know, they don't try to make it that way.
So, what as obviously a pro trainer, you've had a lot of pro fighters under you. What's like the biggest thing you take for it at the moment?
What do you mean?
So, if people was to think about becoming a pro trainer.
Oh, what did I get out of it?
Yeah, what advice would you give?
I could be really honest about it. I would say, this is what I would say. I would say, assess how much time you can really afford before you step into it, because everything suffers. Family holidays, anniversaries, all sorts of stuff, you know. And it's not just you that suffers, it's the people that are at home and all this sort of stuff. You know, make sure that you're prepared to lose money, because unless we're training the likes of, you know, proper British and above champions, you're not going to earn a penny out of it. You will lose more money than, you know, every bit of money I've ever earned, we'll call it earned from boxing, you know, has gone straight back into it, because there was always an hole that had to be filled in something. You know, people have got to understand the cost it is to run in a gym. You know, you have to buy the equipment, you have to maintain the equipment, you have to have insurance policies, you have to have travelling expenses, you have to, you know, all of this stuff. It's not really catered for within that thing. And I'll repeat what I said earlier on. We worked it out, me and my wife worked it out, because my wife used to run the gym with me, of course. You know, she used to train, but she's a brilliant trainer now as a, you know, like she's a PT now. Yeah. You know, brilliant at that. we used to run the, and we worked it out, we were spending 3,000 minimum, you know, sometimes more than that, £3,000 a year of our own money. Are you prepared to do that? If you're not prepared to do that, find something else to do where someone will pay you a bit more money. You know what I mean? It's as simple as that. What I did get out of it on a positive note, that was a bit negative. I don't like being negative. I've met the very, very best people in the world. You know, absolute diamonds. There's this old saying, I don't know what it is, but it's something like bonds in blood aren't easily broken. And it's absolutely true. I've got a mate, he's a professor, actually. I know you used to think, oh, God, how good. He's one of my best friends. He's Richard Bailey, Professor Richard Bailey. And he, I trained him for kickboxing, and he went up and knocked it. You know, bearing in mind, he's the poshest bloke I know, and he reckons he's common in the academic world. But I don't think, I'm not having it like this. He was sitting there waiting for a fight one day with his book open, his glasses on the end of his nose, reading The Life and Times of Karl Popper. Like this, while someone walked in and goes, I hate Southerners and I hate university students, like that. And he's like that. And then he went out and knocked him out later on, you know, because the bloke could fight, you know what I mean? Pacifist and all this sort of stuff. And I've totally lost where I was going with this story. it's like you just meet such a variation of people, and never judge a book by its cover. Never do that because you're in for a real surprise if you don't, you know. I've met the best people, you know, there's no doubt about it.
What are you doing now? Because obviously you're still training now.
Yeah, well, I do a little bit here and there with people, you know. But I've got a little gym at the bottom of my garden, which is my wife. That's where my wife does her full-time job in there. She trains people. It's a hell of a job with the traffic. Sometimes a blackbird walks in the way or something, you know, or a sparrowhawk swoops down or something. But she goes out the back door straight into the cabin at the bottom of the garden, which we've turned into a little gym. It's nothing fancy, but it's quite nice, quite a pleasant environment. And I do a little bit in there from time to time with people. And that's it, really. I mean, for me, lockdown changed everything.
Yeah. Yes.
So, it was on the verge of killing small boxing. Lockdown was, when it, I mean, if all those people that train these small fighters, and you know, poor old Joe who was trying to promote small fights as well, it was a nightmare for everyone, and there was no help for it's one of my criticisms of the boxing world. There's all these people earning millions and millions and millions of pounds, and there was no help for the small hall side of things, where it would have been nice for the boxing community to come together a little bit, in my opinion. And filter some of that down, because they wouldn't have been where they were. And I'm not talking just about fights, I'm talking about the big promoters and television, Sky and stuff like that, you know.
Probably an idea, just like someone like BBC. I know they got burnt through Audley Harrison, but BBC can just go get a little contract to all these small hall promoters and go and put it on BBC Three. Like,
how about this for an idea, right? Boxing is, you know, as big as it's ever been now, isn't it? You know, obviously with female boxing, there's a lot of equality there and everything like that. Why on earth aren't someone like ITV, who used to have fantastic boxing programs on
Saturday?
All three, weren't it? They had Saturday ones, and they used to have a Wednesday one or something like that, a Wednesday night one, didn't they? And it was all small fights. I've got stuff on VHS. If I showed you, there's fights of like people like Terry Marsh fighting in like a circus tent and things like this. You know, they were promoting all the small fights, and they'd have like one little title on there, and it might be it might be a British title or something like that, and occasionally it'd be a European title, and that'd be a bit of a big show. All three, because they were getting the viewing numbers. Well, they're going to get more viewing numbers now. So why aren't they doing that? Why don't they just do a thing where they do just a small whole show?
That's what I mean.
All that stuff's covered, isn't it?
Like BBC or ITV, as you say.
BBC, ITV. BBC had brilliant. You had Harry Carpenter on the BBC, brilliant boxing pundit. And on ITV, you used to have Reg Gutteridge, who, you know, apart from the fact he just didn't stop going on about Frank Bruno, he was really great.
Yeah. The Louis Green fight just happened this weekend. That's what I mean. He's just fought this weekend for a Commonwealth title.
Yeah.
On and it, I followed the show, but could there was no link. Yeah, no link couldn't get like a, oh, a and it was just a shame as well.
You know, while we're on now the subject, Scotland, Lou, I've got to say this, Lou, another absolute diamond. Oh, you've had him on.
Yeah, we've had him on. Yeah, he was great as well.
Another absolute diamond. That bloke. You know, I'm going to nick a phrase. I think it was from Marvin Hagler. If you cut the top of his head off, it'd be like Brighton Rock with boxing written for him. You know what I mean? But Lou, I mean, everyone in Medway, everyone that I know that's around boxing, we've got so much admiration for that bloke because he, to me, attitude is the perfect boxer. I know, you know, without giving too much away, he was offered easier fights early on in his career. Him and his dad, I mean, John, I mean, another fantastic bloke, you know, a great trainer, great bloke generally. There's absolutely no bullshit about the pair.
No.
There's no bullshit. And if you went, why don't you fight him and go, why? And
his thing was as well on him, like his thing was he wants to look at his kids and tell his kids. Yeah, he wants to tell his kids that he had the best fights at the best time and he's won titles for that way.
And look at him going, you know, and I've got so much admiration for him. And he's a great bloke. And you know, I was talking to him and his dad one day, and they both remember this. And we was down, I'll tell you where we was training. We was down that blooming, do you know when Brompton moved to that kind of like underground car park?
Yeah.
It was like a demilitarized zone, wasn't it? You know what I mean? It looked like someone had broken in and tried to decorate it. It was really, wasn't it? It was about as rough as it could get. Anyway, we was in there one day, and he'd come down to spar with Luke Gibb. You know, another bloke. I mean, love him the bitch, and I really do.
He's just sort of killing him.
I'll tell you what, you know, he's another bloke. He's as hard as nails, and you speak to him, he's such a gentle fellow.
Oh, yeah, he's but a top bloke.
He's an absolute. I bet there's a few people come across with him, you know, thinking they could have one over on him because that geezer can fight, and what a talent he is. You know, I wish I could have done more for him, to be honest with you, you know, but he should have been picked up by one of the bigger promoters and really brought on because that bloke is super talented. Anyway, once again, coming in there, we're going off on a run. I was talking to Lou and his dad. Oh, that's probably messed all the things up. He's banging the table. I was talking to John and Lou, and I was talking about him. I'm going, you know, you're a really nice bloke, and you know what I'm saying, and all this sort of stuff. And I said, trouble is, Lou, I goes, I bet you don't get many people approach you because of your resting bitch face. I said, you know, you look as hard as nails, and you're the most lovely, reasonable bloke that you ever was. And I said exactly that, and you know, like Lou sort of smirked, and his dad laughed, and that, like that. And they went, yeah, it's pretty true. Really. You know, and it is, isn't it? You know what I mean? You know, it looks as hard, isn't it?
Yeah.
It looks as
hard
as he's not right. Looking as hard for
us. I mean,
he is, isn't it? Yeah.
Is there anything we've missed?
Oh, there's loads. I could go on for ages. I mean, I go down the shops and I go missing for an hour. And I've come back and forgot what I went out there for and come back. And where have you been? And I went, I don't know. this is dealing with this sort of thing, you know. But yeah, I've got a list of people's. I wrote this list, and you probably laughed your head off when I said it. I mean, the other people is Zeki Hussain, another real talent. But I mean, work got in his way with lots of things, and you know, various different people. But an absolute diamond, I love it. Luke Gibbo, as I've said, a real talent, and the only person I've ever allowed to switch it. When people want to do switching, I go, no, you can't do it. And they went, why not? I go, because you ain't any good at it. And they go, yeah, but I feel comfortable. How comfortable you feel. I said, you get it every time you switch. Every time you switch, you get it, you know. And I love training southpaws, you know. I love it. It's one of the things I really like. I hope I helped Charlie on his way, you know, to box like a proper southpaw rather than someone that just stands like a southpaw. You know, he didn't position himself right and things like that. And so I tried to help him along with things like that. But Luke Gibbo, he goes, I'll switch it. And I went, I'll do you now. We'll see about that. And I watched him spar and thought, bloody hell.
He does it good.
I mean, he went to spar with one of the McGuigan, was one of the McGuigan blokes, Josh Taylor. That's by Josh Taylor. And who's the fella from Hull that he trained as well?
Coyle.
No. Me and Joe Will Feed were on the same show as Crawler's, his debut in Hull.
Crawler's Manchester. It's not Coyle. Is it Coyle?
I can't remember. Anyway, he's sparring with him, and then we can stop. He done a round of him, and he switched it. And if I'm honest, at least for one round, Luke was boxing his ears off. Yeah. I mean, this bloke was ex-Olympian and all that sort of stuff. And the McGuigans went, stop, Luke, we don't want to switch it in because that's not what we're preparing for, you know. Yeah. And that was fair enough. They've got him into spar for a reason. They stopped him doing that, you know.
But Luke Campbell?
Yeah. So it was.
Luke Campbell?
Yeah. Yeah, because he was, I don't know if he still is, but he was with Shane McGuigan, wasn't he?
Yes.
Yeah, and me and Joe, I've got to tell you something. We mentioned the blue bomb, didn't we? Me and Joe gone up there, and I had this old KA that I drove up there in, and we pulled up outside the Flash Hotel in Hull. This was on his debut thing, sold the place. That was in Hull Football Ground, I think it was. And we pulled up at the hotel where we were staying the night. And my car, it was a bit like, I'm trying to think of the car that done it. Uncle Buck's car in John Candy and Uncle Buck's car. This KA, every time I stopped it went like that, and it was all right for a few thousand more miles. And I pulled up there, so I think all these top boxers are out there, you know, having their meal. They'd all weighed in and was tucking into the dinners outside, beautiful sunny day, and there was all outside, and I pulled up. The blue bomb turned. Joe got out of his motor. Then I turned up behind this old bone shaking, and then it went bang! They all shit themselves. there was steaks flying up in the air and everything, you know. And the only person I know that had a worse car than me was Adam Dingsdale. He was boxing up in Doncaster one day, and I said, Adam, I'm going to need a lift back because I've got to lift up now, so I need a lift back. Is that all right? He went, yeah, of course it is. So I got in his car and I looked and I went, what's up with your wheels, Adam? And he went, they're all them temporary wheels. You know them ones?
The space saver one.
He had four space saver wheels in his car. And we travelled back at 90 mile an hour, and I am not exaggerating. Every bump, we probably took off about 3 foot and landed in a different lane. You know what I mean? It was, to say it was scary, it was an understatement.
Just quickly, was you... So Joe's Elfeed, he beat...
Joe Hughes.
You were there that night.
I think I trained it. I think he did two pro fights before I started training him.
Oh, okay.
And I think I'm right. I mean, I might be wrong. If someone's wants to correct me, they're happy to do it. I might be for that. I can't remember that. But yeah, I was there at that one, and that was quite funny. That was when Kelly Maloney was Frank Maloney.
Yeah.
I've got to say, I liked both versions of that person. You know what I mean? I know he took it. She is a really brave person, because in a world like boxing and a Millwall fan, you know, that takes some balls, doesn't it? You know what I mean? You know, and if that's who that person is, then that's off to him. But anyway, it was a Frank Maloney show, that was. Joe Hughes was the clearly the favourite to win, and Joe had gone as a journeyman, you know, to fight him. Because he's from Doncaster, it was in Doncaster, and it just blew everyone's mind, and they couldn't make out whether Joe was the headliner or the whatever, and that they was aware of that Joe had quite a good following up north. He's got a load of good friends up there, and they kept on coming and warming us up. So I'd warm Joe up, warm him up, and I go, right, you're on the next fight. Like, and then they'd come and go, oh, no, we've got another fight, and we forgot to tell you. And then he'd sit there. And I don't know if any of you boys did, you know, like in the amateurs and things like that. I've done it in kickboxing. I've done MMA for it. I've done this MMA competition once, and I had to have five fights in one day. you know, where they do that sort of thing. Yeah, yeah, and then it's like a knockout contest to get to the final. And it was a bit like one of them. But luckily, I'd had the experience of having to have more than one fight in one day myself, personally. Yeah. And I knew the biggest problem with doing that, having multiple fights on one day, is stopping the stiffness setting in and keeping yourself warm enough but not overeating. Right. So I kind of got it off to a fine art myself. So he's warming up and I just sent to Joe, I go, no, just put some towels around you and just sit there, stay warm. And as that fight ends, we're not going to warm you up anymore, because I've done about three or four rounds of pads with him. Not stupid ones, you know, but light ones.
Yeah.
And he was just ready to go on there. And I said, we'll do it. And he came in again. Oh, no, not this fight, next one, like that. I sat down, said, sit down again. I said, don't worry about it, John. Just come on. Anyway, he went in there and beat the thing. So that was the punishment for playing them silly games. And that's the silly games that do get played with you.
Yeah.
You know, you've got to be prepared.
Yeah.
People don't understand that up, and to be honest,
no,
as well.
They don't.
So, wow.
Book.
Yes, your book.
Do you know roughly?
What's that?
Your book.
Oh, well, the book. Yes, yeah, this would be an interesting
read. Yeah.
I don't, but you know, as you know, and probably thanks to my wife knows, everyone on the internet knows, I've just had an hernia operation. So yeah. I'm off work for the next month. And so I'm spending a lot of time writing it. And one of the things, you know, obviously people would always assume that you're a bit of a, people have got these wrong conceptions about boxers. Most of the ones I know are really pretty intelligent people. Whether they're academic or not is another
matter. Yeah.
Charlie Shane is a classic one. Charlie Shane, because he's, you know, he's as common as muck. I mean, I know you won't mind me telling you that, but he is a really, really intelligent bloke. Speak to him for long enough and you'll get how intelligent he is. Yeah. He's super intelligent, actually. It's just that he swears a lot. Yeah. Far too much for him to use.
We've had him on here.
Did he tell you when I coached him? I coached Charlie. This is ADHD actually again. I'm going to laugh. I'm really sorry. And I said to him, I goes, Charlie, please, do me a favour, will you present yourself better in your interviews? I said, because you're going on there. And I said, if you get interviewed by some big Sky News or something like that, they're not going to want to read your effing and blinding all the time. So please do it. So his next interview, he has it. I think it was Dan Woodgate or one of the other fellas.
Shadowbox.
One of them. He went on there and went, yeah, what do you think of him? He said, he's a big fucker. Blah, 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 like that. And he went, oh, sorry for swearing. And then he swore and swore and swore. But the only difference was from my coaching. He said sorry after.
I love Charlie.
To be fair,
Diamond.
When we had him on, he said he was comfortable with doing it. He actually, and when you listen to
him. Well, no, first off, he was pretty nervous.
Wasn't he? He come in, he said he had that. And then but as he was just talking, it was all good. And he speaks really quick, and you're just like...
He does, because his mind works really quick.
Yeah.
He's another ADHD.
He was good.
But the other one for that as well was Mickey Mills, of course. You know, Mick.
Oh, we had him on after.
Yeah. I love him. I love Mick. I've got so much admiration for him. But when you know a bit about his life and everything, you can't do anything but really admire him. But I was there one day, and he answered the phone to a burp. And I went... He put the phone down and I went, Mick, what is that here? And he went, what? And I went, because you answered the phone to a burp. And he went, yeah, it's better out than in. And I goes, you are really talented, because he's a really talented boxer, you know.
Yeah,
his coaching is absolutely brilliant. He's a brilliant coach, right? And his organisation skills, his ideas, everything is really, really good. His presentation was shit. You know, and I said, work on your presentation. I said, and everything else is good, mate. You know, that's it. I think that's it. You can all go to bed now.
Well, what we like to do, if you've not got anything else to add,
no, I've got loads to do, but I won't.
That's all right.
That stuff. I've got loads of people. I'm going to just mention it's one thing I would really like to mention. It's my friend, Ian John Lewis. you know, recently he's come out of the boxing border.
Yeah.
Now, we all know what that was about, don't we? We all know it was about, you know, his
decision. The Adam Catchell, Josh Taylor fight.
Yeah. Now, I just want to offer this perspective to people from just a thing. There's a thing in my up-and-coming book. It's called I Fucking Hate Boxing. That's what it's going to be called. It'll be available. I don't know if it'll even ever get printed. But anyway, but if you do ever get a chance to, you know, you'll read about things about how sometimes people are labelled as something. And even if it's not even if it's not true, it sticks with people. And sadly, they have to walk around with that labelling. I watched that fight, and that wasn't whatever anyone else thinks. We're watching from the benefit of a television screen that has got multiple angles that you watch that from. And it's very, very easy to judge. It's easier to, if they could put a television screen in front of them, all the multiple angles, you'd get better decisions.
Yes.
If they was did. Mm. But watch that carefully. Watch that, because this is my challenge to anyone listening and us people in here. Watch that carefully on YouTube. But in your brain, put yourself where Ian John Lewis is watching it from. He's only got one angle. And when you look at that angle, a lot of the time, the fighters were square on. He wasn't getting angles. He was seeing arms move. He wasn't always seeing the clean punch. And when he was seeing the clean punch, I don't know if I'm right or if I'm wrong, but I'm saying it how I saw it.
Yeah.
He may have only seen the punch. He may have seen the majority of punches coming from Taylor.
Yeah.
And the other punches may have been blinded to him. I'm not trying to make excuses for him because he don't need him. He is a top class. He's one of the best referees in the world.
Yeah.
And he's a top class bloke, a real down-to-earth diamond of a bloke. And I think the boxing border control chucked him under the bus. Chucked him under the bus.
100% because I was literally going to add to that as well with don't matter if it's I understand obviously it's such a high pressure situation. There's a lot of things on the line. I understand Catchell had the opportunity to create history as well. So I understand
one side. That. Yeah, my heart goes out. Oh, I believe he won that fight, but then I had the benefit of all them
angles. Yeah, and obviously, as you're pointing out, like you said, he's got one view. And again, I agree. I thought Catchell won the fight. But what I will say, however you score it, however you judge it, you're a judge there, however it's scored, right? They've chucked him under the bus instead of going and coaching. And sometimes, because we're all human, everyone makes mistakes. I'm not saying he made the mistake because he scored it how he scored it. But what I'm saying, you can come out and go, okay. So that I do believe that the abuse that come after was absolutely sickening.
That does not warrant a decent bloke like Ian. No. I'll tell you that now. Because that bloke would go out of his way to come and do something for you. The bloke is an absolute diamond. And to abuse him, the abuse he got over there, and I mean, he's still very quiet on places like Facebook and things like that. I think it's such a shame because that bloke has earned everything he's ever done. He's come from a place, certainly like that I've come from, you know, a rough area, he's a Medway boy, he's worked his way up and got to the position he's got to. Do they think that he gave up? He gave up his bloody life for that sort of thing.
Yeah.
And just so, because they were getting so much shit over it, over the decision and that weren't down to one bloke. That weren't down to Ian John Lewis.
Yeah, no.
And, you know, anyone that's giving him really bad abuse, hold your head in shame.
Yeah.
Because, the same people that go, oh, that bloke's a mug in there, you know, never been in a boxing ring in their life. You know, when they see someone getting beaten in a fight by someone, oh, he only lasted around. Yeah, you jump in and do it and hold your head in shame for even talking about decent human beings like that.
I've only known him probably, 8 years. And when we started this, I reached out to him and I said, it'd be really good to get you on. And he, to these boys, his genuine reply was, I can't do anything until
it's
the situation is sorted.
No.
And you know, you think,
that's cruel, isn't it?
Yeah. Basically, and I used to, the thing, in the security side, we go and do the Joe's, the Moat Park shows, but we go up to the O2, we go to Wembley, And we'd see him there. And he'd be like, ah, I've seen you another one, Ian. And it's different, isn't it? He's not there. You know, you just think...
Everything's changed,
it's,
yeah.
Cops says, you know... Do you know what cracks me up? It's a real bone of contention with me is everything is like, you know, mental health, you know. Oh, we've got to look after people's mental health. I was going to say, well, be kind and all this sort of stuff. And the same, you know, not everyone. I think a lot of us have become more aware and we're perhaps a lot more considerate than we used to be in the past. Because, I mean, I was as guilty as many of the people I was never that bad. I was never abusive because I do like to give people a fair crack of the whip and things like that. But nevertheless, you know, I would go, sit up with him, you know. And, you know, you used to call people simple, nutters and all this sort of stuff without knowing anything about these people, about anything that's got them in this position. And all these people are talking about this and then they abuse someone so badly that it can... Depression. You know, the consequences
could
be devastating.
The abuse, I just remember, I was like, however, whatever happened, however which way, is there just score a fight? I don't care how we scored the fight now. It's just gone beyond that. Obviously, like I said, I feel sorry for Catterall. There's no two ways about it. And so like, because he's obviously, potentially he's lost his chance. He's only been asked to do a job. He's only doing a job. He's only there to do a job. Okay, people have disagreed with him.
But his benefit is this. He didn't lose the fight, not under anyone else's eyes. So, for you know, like for publics, when you're talking about the public, when you're talking about the internet, they're not going on there going, yeah, you lost it. Well, they probably are because these idiots on there, these trolls, they abuse anyone.
Yeah.
But, I mean, he's got the benefit of not getting the abuse. I mean, that's a win.
Also, he weren't the only judge that scored it to Josh Taylor. Another judge. He wouldn't have won the fight otherwise. If he and John Lewis was the only one that scored it and the other two scored it to Catterall, Catterall would have won the fight.
I don't know what the scoring was.
It was a split decision. I remember it being a split decision. Yeah. So there's another judge there that I can't tell you who the other judge was.
It's
not just Ian John Lewis that's fault that of that, that one
you
way.
Know, you know the thing that did, what they did is, and this is why I'm guessing that Ian moved along, is they took his star rating off of him.
Yeah.
That was something to be proud of, to get a star rating. You don't get one of them. I mean, you know, he was was it the WBC
referee of the year?
Yeah.
They don't have to do that for no reason.
He's a lovely gentleman.
Yeah.
Well, and I hope he gets resolved and it's in his favour.
Yeah, I was going to say.
I hope he has the rest of his career is lovely, and I hope he ends up as happy, go lucky as he always has.
Yeah. The last thing, obviously, we like to ask our guests on, and something I'll be really interested in because you're going to have this plethora of knowledge. We like to create our perfect fighter, so like different attributes. Yeah, I know it's going to be just like boxing IQ. If you were to pick one fighter with a boxing IQ.
Well, are you talking about maybe people I've trained?
No, anyone, past, present. It can even be. It is.
Well, yeah. You know, I'm going to be really, really boring. I know that, again, once again, with the internet world, it'd be a bone of contention. But Mayweather, you know, I don't care what anyone says. I think Floyd Mayweather. Mm. Given any time, and I know all the egos, and I know all the people that are going, oh yeah, he wouldn't have beat so-and-so and all this sort of stuff. We can't judge it.
Right? Yeah,
his record stands up for himself. The only person I think, correct me if I'm wrong, because I haven't seen every single one of his fights, but I think it's Oscar De La Hoya gave him a proper fight, and I think that was one that was a little bit.
Was it Ran Castello?
There's one in his.
Yeah, I think it was
he didn't lose I mean, it's one of those ones. But no, Floyd Mayweather, his boxing brain, his timing, and everything. You've got to bear in mind I think it was about maybe 5 years before he fought Ricky Hatton, he was telling everyone, I'm not the fighter I used to be. My body's breaking down through being at high level competition.
Mm.
He said, my body's breaking down. I have a lot of work done on me. So putting that into perspective to the level he continued to fight at right until the end, and just watching, you know, I love aggressive counter punching, and you know, it's the thing that to me that is the art of boxing. It's a beautiful thing, you know. And you watch him slip, move, counter, turn. Switch.
What about footwork? Boxer with the best footwork, Eve.
Boxer with the best footwork. Well, I don't know. To be honest with you, I don't know, but I'm going to tell you one. I'll tell you someone where everyone should remember, and he deserves so much more respect because he's kind of forgotten about a little bit more. But do you remember Errol Graham?
Errol Graham.
Yeah.
I mean, there wouldn't be Nassim as, if there weren't Errol Graham. Errol Graham nurtured Naz through, it was all of his, as someone I must mention before, nurtured him throughout his amateur career. He was at Brendan Ingalls' gym. You know, he was the first person to fight how Naz fought. Naz was copying Errol Graham. He used to have his hands down. He used to go into public, his hands tied behind his back. And he'd give anyone a tenner if they could hit him. That's a legend in Sheffield. Oh, wow. Ask anyone, right? And he was amazing. He got absolutely iced by Julian Jackson. It's the worst knockout you've ever seen. It's the only fight I've ever seen where it shows in slow motion and his eyes are closed before he hits the ground. You know, he got absolutely iced by him, but he was boxing his ears off up until that point. But his footwork was good. Everything about him, his defensive stuff, was second to none. You know, people should be referring to him now, but this just shows you the fickle business of boxing, really. You know, but there's someone I really do want to mention. He was me and my wife's best friend, Andy Kidd, was his trainer, and that was Michael Wright, who boxed out of St Mary's gym. Sadly, died a few. I would like to say he died about 5 years ago, but it was probably much, much more than that. But he was our best friend. He was a brilliant boxer, boxed Naz in the amateurs.
Mm.
And I believe Naz mentions him in his autobiography as saying one of the hardest fights I ever had in the amateurs with St Mary's was Michael Wright. Was the absolute business. Sadly, his lifestyle, you know, ended his life early. Mm. And it's really, really sad. But he was me and Kelly's best friend. He used to come spend every weekend with us watching boxing, having a couple of beers, and used to come to the gym and train with us all, and you know, used to spar with everyone in the gym, and, you know.
Mm.
It's such a shame. And then of course I lost one of my best friends, Tony Edwards, as well, you know, just over the last week or so. And me and my wife are absolutely gutted over it, as was anyone that trained at the gym at that time, you know. But yeah, all of those people, yeah, very, very sad.
Mm. All right. Finish there, I guess. Yeah. Thank you for joining us. Obviously, thank you. It's really actually, nice to have a chat. It was good to get, obviously, just a perspective of a trainer's point of view. We like the whole point of the podcast is just try and get as many different views for as many parts of boxing to try and, because, like you say, casual fans maybe don't know stuff that happens maybe behind the scenes, so it's nice to get different views, and that's
one of the things I do, I've loved about coaching is it's lovely to pass something on. You know, I mean, if you can pass someone on, I've trained people from nothing to pro, you know, that's not a brag, it's just a thing that, you know, it's nice to know what you're doing works.
Mm, yeah,
you
yeah,
know?
Yeah.
And you know, my motto is I can teach anyone something.
Yeah, that could be the tag for your episode.
Yeah. But I mean, you know, that's I believe I can.
Yeah, yeah.
And you know, I do love doing it, and you know, in the course, I mean, all trainers will tell you this, and at some stage, you do have, it's a really, you know, power should not be abused, and you're in a really powerful position because you can change people's lives for either the good or the worse.
Yeah. Oh, well, thank you. Just to Cohen, come support us on Patreon, £3 a month. Also, follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, The Journeyman Stories. Thank Cheers. You.
Sports Social Podcast Network.